Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm here with Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're breaking down what happened in week 12. We have an interview with the great Mike Rooney of D1 Baseball, and we're looking ahead at the last week in the regular season for a lot of teams. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how was your weekend? How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. My wife's birthday was this weekend, and we celebrated with a cooking class, making some fried chicken and mac and cheese, and it was so good.
That sounds amazing. Cooking classes are so good.
Like, they're so fun.
I love eating food. But the bad thing about, like, actually, there's a little bit of blissful ignorance when it comes to cooking classes, because it always seems like the secret is just add a stick of butter or like add a bunch of fat. And, you know, you kind of realize why certain food tastes good and why the stuff you cook at home never tastes quite as good.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it makes it a lot easier too with cooking classes. Like when they like prepare a lot of stuff for you, like it seems to be the worst part of cooking is getting all the ingredients ready. And the best part is eating it. And this is like a little bit of both. And it's still fun to like learn new cooking methods and stuff.
Yeah, I know I'm getting old. Like I'm no longer in like early mid 20s. I'm definitely late 20s when I get excited about like a new cooking utensil. Like we got a wok recently, which is so great because we were like every time we made veggies or whatever, like things were just spilling over, and now we have this huge pan and I'm way too excited about it. So that I know I'm officially an old person.
Oh yeah, I felt the same way with our food processor and our like stand-up mixer that, like with like the super nice one. It's so nice. Like just making bread and making cookies is so much easier than that.
Yeah, maybe instead of like seeking funding different ways, we should just start like a registry for the podcast and just see if people will buy us like cooking utensils.
Let's do it.
But let's get to college baseball. So a lot of baseball happened over the weekend, and we're getting some clarity with some conferences. While on the other hand, some are still pretty up in the air, and that's the case for the SEC. So Arkansas and Tennessee had just an absolute barn burner of a series. I don't know like who showed up in Knoxville and, you know, got like set some alarm clocks and got those fans to the field, because Knoxville was rocking over the weekend. Like that was such a great atmosphere. I'm super impressed by Tennessee fans.
Yeah. Did you see how they like set up the checkered stands like they do at football games at Neyland?
Yeah, it was like SEC football weekend packed into a baseball stadium. Like I Tony Vitello at Tennessee is doing such a good job of not only bringing good baseball but hyping up that program. And I mean, just tons of energy. I thought they did a great job with the Vanderbilt series earlier, and Arkansas Tennessee was even more raucous. And I mean, the teams put up like three great games. I think that was part of it. A lot of those games were decided in the eighth inning or later. There was a walk-off by Max Ferguson, three-run blast in game two to even the series. The strongest correlation of success in that series was games that Kevin Copps pitched. Arkansas won game two and he didn't. Arkansas lost. So there's the like hardcore cutting analysis that I got for you. Kevin Copps is really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
And once again, though, he did like two extended outings. I went what, three innings, I think, on in game one, and then did 3 2/3 in game three. So 6 2/3 inning over the weekend. And that's just par for the course. He's pitching 5, 6, 7 innings a weekend, basically functioning like a starter in terms of innings pitched. He shrunk he has the ERA now down at 0.8. So he gave one earned run over the weekend, but in 6 2/3 pitch, not too bad.
Yeah, and shout out to Tennessee Sunday starter Blade Tidwell. He went 7 innings in a loss. That's a hard-earned loss.
And that kid's a freshman. He's a freshman, dude. Tennessee, like that
threw 100 pitches, only gave up 2 earned runs, had 8 strikeouts, and was otherwise pretty good. Like 4 walks isn't great, but still 7 innings is really good. And Tennessee fans should be pleased with that. And they also chased out Arkansas Sunday starter Lyle Lockhart, and after 4 1/3. So like you, that's kind of all you want to happen, but Arkansas just like knows how to get it done.
Yeah, there were definitely some standout bad pitching performances for Arkansas. So like the starters for Arkansas didn't quite have the performance that maybe Arkansas fans would like. And I think that's kind of been known to be maybe a little a weakness in the Arkansas team, but because they have some of the best relievers in the country and an offense that is never quite out of it, they had some come from behind wins, and Arkansas wins another series. They have yet to drop a series. Since the last time we covered this, there were four teams that hadn't dropped a series, down to three because Stanford dropped series at Cal over the weekend. So it's just East Carolina, Arkansas, and Fairfield that are among the undefeated on the weekends. So that was a W for me in the win column for the pick'em. I got that one right. Let's move over to the Big 12, where Baylor, Oklahoma State put on a really entertaining series. I really enjoyed that series. The Bears came into town ahead of Oklahoma State in the Big 12 standings. Oklahoma State won two out of three games, won the first two games. The third one was kind of messed up with weather, but Baylor got an important win to keep them just one game under 500 in the conference. Baylor will host Oklahoma next weekend, and what's going to be a really interesting kind of do or die weekend, maybe for both teams. Baylor has a good enough RPI. Oklahoma absolutely doesn't to get in right now. But Baylor is going to be kind of continuing their string of high stakes series.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of series in a row that are super important for both teams. I mean, Oklahoma State's done with their conference tournament or with their conference play, but they definitely need to win the series against New Orleans. I think they still are in the tournament. Oklahoma State is right now. They finished the season with an over 500 record in the Big 12. They might end up finishing behind Baylor in the conference standings due to Baylor playing another series in conference play. But I mean, really good. It was a really fun series. The Friday night game went to 11 innings, and it was a really back and forth game. Oklahoma State got up early, and Baylor called their way back in. And then they took game three. So, I mean, a sweep would have been probably disastrous for Baylor, but I think taking a game is fine. It's weird how like one game can be that pivot.
Yeah, you can't get swept, especially late in the season. So Oklahoma State now is at 14 in the RPI. I'm updating the bubble watch right now, and I'm moving Oklahoma State into lock position. I think no matter what they do the last weekend, even if they got swept by New Orleans, they would have the RPI and conference record to make it into a regional. But They're kind of sneaking up there as a team that might end up as a one seed in a regional, but not host because of the announcements with the top 20 hosts being announced last week, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But running through a couple of the other big series that happened, let's head over to the West Coast. Santa Barbara and UCLA had a little home away weekend, where UCLA hosted two games. Santa Barbara got one of those. And overall in the series, UCLA won 2-3. I think there promised to be a little bit of a pitcher's duel, and there's a few games that kind of got away. Two games were kind of lopsided. Michael McGreevy, though, the UCSB starter, is just, I think, one of the most interesting arms on the West Coast. He's a guy who's raised his draft stock considerably by, I think we talked about him really early on this season in the podcast. His velo went up 5-6 miles per hour on the fastball, where he's in mid-90s, can touch high 90s. And he got the win for Santa Barbara on Friday, but UCLA came back in that series. UCLA is, I think, in my mind, too, moving towards lock position. But they're one of those teams that when they're good, they're good. And when they're not, they're really not.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a pretty up and down weekend. It seems or a season. It seems like, and they got. I think they got the series win at home against Arizona to start the year to start a conference play, but they also started the year losing a series at home to San Francisco. So like, it's just that's kind of the tail of the season for them right there. They've been in a lot of these series though. Like they were in the series on the road at Stanford. They won the last game and didn't get blown out in the first two. So like they're a really good team. They're talented. We know that. So I think they're probably in. They're not a host.
Yeah, and an interesting stat that I saw over the weekend was that UCLA lost game one of the series with Santa Barbara 10-4, and that was their worst loss of the year. Which, I mean, 6 runs is, you know, not a small gap, but you know, they've been losing a lot of relatively close games. It's not like they're getting blown out. I think it's due to the fact that they have pretty consistent pitching. I say that, but Zach Pettway, their Friday night starter, had a pretty poor start on Friday. Santa Barbara drove him out after just a couple innings. So it's going to be really interesting. This is like, there's a few teams that are like this. Virginia, I think, is in that boat. And Runes is going to touch on that later. NC State, Florida. There's teams that are maybe peaking at the right time, or at least trending in the right direction, have guys that are super talented, maybe some older guys, some guys that are going to get drafted really high, and they might end up getting a little bit underseeded and have a chance to win a regional. I would put UCLA in that category, but also, though, they've demonstrated that they aren't the most consistent. So I'm really curious to see where they get placed in a regional. Probably they're going to be a 2 seed somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, I would guess the same way.
Let's move up to the Midwest, where we have no idea what the committee's going to do with any of these teams, but they're still playing each other, and that's Indiana and Michigan. Indiana was leading the conference heading into the weekend. Michigan took 2 out of 3 games off the Hoosiers. And this was one of the ones that I picked correctly. I kind of just went with the home team. So, I mean, call it a little bit of a gut there, just root for the home team. Nebraska, though, had a pretty good weekend of them for their own. So Nebraska's actually now in first place in the Big Ten. Michigan and Indiana are tied for second place, but Indiana has a better winning percentage. Yeah, what do you think of this series? Did you catch any of it?
I didn't get to catch any of it because I don't have a way to watch the Big Ten network. But I mean, I think they were all pretty close games. It came down to the last game, and I think Michigan won it pretty handily. But still, like this is not a disaster scenario for either team, I don't think.
Yeah. So the last series I want to talk about was from our pick'em was Campbell at USC Upstate. And the reason why this was interesting is because both of these teams were in the top 60 in the RPI. USC Upstate really being top like 40, had a good shot in that large bid. These were the first and third place team in the Big South. Campbell had beaten USC Upstate in a series at Campbell earlier this year. So this is a little bit of a kind of a revenge scenario for USC Upstate. Let's like take it to the Camels, knock them off, clinch the Big South. And that absolutely did not happen. Campbell swept USC Upstate to move the season record to 5-1 on the year against the Spartans. And Campbell now has climbed to the top 40 in the RPI. It's really interesting. There's like just, we talked about it last week on the podcast. There's just a handful of these mid-major teams that are getting pretty high RPIs. The Big South is not always a conference that's just that one auto bid that's a 4 seed. And you know, if Campbell can keep winning, they might be able to squeak up onto the 3 seed line in a regional. I think that's kind of what the Big South is playing for. USC Upstate still has a chance at an at-large bid, but the difference obviously between being a 4 seed and a 3 seed in the regional is pretty huge. So if Campbell can get hot at the end of the year and get onto that 3 line, you know, all of a sudden there's a whole lot better chance of getting in the winner's bracket in a regional.
Yeah, because you can avoid that. The 1 seed, the host is always the best team. And like we've seen the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years that the 2 and 3 seeds are kind of like they've kind of gone back and forth between who has the higher winning percentage in the postseason. So that's it'd be pretty good and pretty impressive if they can get up there. They're 25-9 in conference, a game and a half, a game up on Gardner-Webb, and another half game up on SC Upstate. Upstate is still in the top 50 in RPI. They're at 46. They got swept, unfortunately. So I mean, they could have been like not fallen as far if they had just won one of those games. But this was a important series for Campbell to win. I think they're probably solidifying their at large case?
I don't know. It's so tough. Like there's the Big South, there's the Mountain West. There's a couple of these conferences that have a few teams in the top 50. And I don't know if the committee is just going to look at that and be like, that's a little fishy. Let's ignore that this year because we can. But if the 20 regional host sites, the potential sites, revealed anything, I think the RPI still is important. And that is going to segue us to talking about that just really briefly. So on Friday, the 20 hosts that are going to be narrowed down to 16 hosts were announced. And we're going to talk about this more with Mike Rooney later. But the summary is basically they walked down the RPI from 1 to 20 with a couple skips. They skipped Fairfield, which I don't think anyone's super surprised because Fairfield hasn't played non-conference. They skipped Old Dominion, which Old Dominion had the highest RPI of any of the Conference USA teams. But by a lot of polls, they were probably the lowest of the top four Conference USA teams. So that kind of felt like the committee thought, you know what, we can't have all four of the Conference USA teams. And they did a little bit of maybe eye test there and thought Old Dominion isn't quite as good as Louisiana Tech, Southern Miss, and Charlotte. But then some of those other teams had not so great weekends. So, you know, Old Dominion might be feeling a little bit more robbed right now. I think maybe, like, what surprised you from that list? Because I think there's maybe some surprises on there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we'll talk about it shortly with Rooney, so I don't want to spoil anything, but the lack of ACC teams is a little bit surprising. But if you take a further look at it, then you see, like, the ACC didn't play that many non-conference games this year. So they played some, which is helpful for their RPI, kind of bringing up the RPI using non-conference games, since they did well in those non-conference games. But they're all beating up on each other and kind of bringing each other back to the pack. There's a bunch of teams in the 40 to 60 range from the ACC. And then like Notre Dame and Pittsburgh up at the top. So that's why those two teams are the only ones to get at large, or to get the hosts announced.
Yep. So I think it's a good transition. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to invite D1 Baseball's Mike Rooney to the podcast. Stick around. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a big guest right now. Joining us is Mike Rooney of D1 Baseball, of coaching, playing, commentating fame, an icon in the sport. Mike Rooney, thanks for joining the podcast.
Icon feels aggressive, but we'll take it. Yes, thank you.
Icon and hero, maybe, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I just refer to myself as college baseball super fan. So there you go. But I'll take whatever. Yeah, it's all good. Good to be with you guys, for sure.
So the biggest news, I think, this last week was we got, for the first time ever, this 20 potential regional hosts announced. And that's because of the weirdness caused by the COVID year. But we got some information about what the postseason's going to look like. And I think, like, one of our first thoughts on that looking down is, man, Old Dominion was pretty high up in the RPI, looking pretty good in Conference USA. Three Conference USA teams ended up getting selected as potential hosts. Old Dominion, should they feel snubbed? And then what do you think about Fairfield, that number two in the RPI? Those are the two teams right there up at the top that got kind of snubbed from this list.
Yeah, I would say, you know, my thing this year has been, I really haven't taken a hard line at the committee in that, hey, like, I just, if they need to have extra time and do this system just to make sure we have an NCAA tournament, I think I'm cool with it. You know, all that said though, right? Like every year there's X amount of players that this is their last chance. And so, you know, you can't just poo-poo it away or just throw stuff against the wall. So, you know, I think, you know, the Fairfield thing is really tricky. Hey, I will say this too, guys, like the Fairfield thing is going to be very interesting going forward, because if I'm an athletic director in the Northeast, I'm looking at what Fairfield accomplished this year. And I'm thinking, hey, do we really want to go south for a month to start the season and get our brains beat in? Like, is that really a good strategy going forward? So I'm curious about that. You know, I could see Fairfield really hard to evaluate. They've only played the MAC schools. I think Old Dominion, you know, you start to run out of Conference USA spots, if you will, not that they dictate it that way. You know, and again, I would say Old Dominion, Chris Finwood, what a great, tragic, sad, unbelievable story. You know, he lost his wife this year during the season to cancer. And yet at the same time, he's got this unbelievable team that has played so well. And so, you know, I think Old Dominion's very dangerous in the tournament, regardless of where they get sent. Just, you know, really an incredible story there. So yeah, we'll see. I think, you know, sorry to belabor the point, but you know, the thing that was top of mind for me when the host sites came out was the ACC and the Big Ten, who took fairly extreme stances on scheduling, and it really backfired. And so, you know, and again, backfire, it's a little dramatic. Hey, they're getting a baseball season in. That's all we really care about. But, you know, very, no Big Ten hosts and only two ACC hosts.
That's a perfect segue into a question we were going to ask you later, but let's hop into it now because I think it's really interesting. I think the committee revealed that they still care a decent amount about RPI. And I mean, what are you going to do? Like, that's one of the metrics that you have out there. And even if it isn't going to be perfect this year, it seems like they're relying upon it a little bit. But like you mentioned, no Big Ten teams, and the RPI is wacky for the Big Ten right now. ACC only got two teams on this list of 20. That was Notre Dame and Pitt. Should those conferences be worried now looking ahead to at-large bids? Do you think that, you know, the ACC teams that are just around 500 are now sweating it a little bit more than they would have now that this announcement's come out that there's only two potential regional hosts from the conference?
Yeah, I would say that's a great question. I would say if we peel it apart one at a time, you know, again, I'm not in the committee room. None of us are, but we're just kind of speculating, which is kind of fun what they're thinking about. I think the problem they got in with the ACC is the ACC kind of has this undertow to 500, right? Like all these teams are getting sucked into the middle. And I think the committee, my guess is they probably went into it thinking, hey, this league deserves more than two hosts, but we don't know who is number three or number four. There's like six of you guys. And so we can't have all six of you in the 20. So we're just going to take a guess. And you know, I think that really hurt the ACC in that regard. I think the Big Ten, I still think the ACC's got a chance to get a significant number of bids, because when they did play non-conference games, the league did perform very well in the non-conference. I mean, you know, it's, hey, BC did go to Auburn and win that series. I know Auburn has struggled, but, you know, it's the last place team in one league versus the last place team in another. They both have talent. You know, Miami taking a series from Florida, that's a data point that doesn't get to go away. I think the Big Ten's got a different problem. You know, the committee, I think to your point, is like RPI is still a criteria for them. And the Big Ten, it doesn't exist. I mean, what do the RPIs even mean in the Big Ten? They're their own universe. And so I think the Big Ten, I still think it probably plays out normally. They probably get four teams in. But, you know, if I was the Big Ten, I would not feel warm and fuzzy right now, because I there's nothing for this committee to measure that conference against.
Yeah, we've been kind of saying all year on our podcast that the committee is just going to like draw a line somewhere in the Big Ten standings and say everyone above here gets in. Sorry to the teams below, because RPI doesn't matter. And the team who's fifth right now in standings has the highest RPI at 65 with Iowa. So it's just kind of, it's all over the place. No one really knows anything at all on that one.
Yeah, and I will tell you guys, the one good part of this is that we really do have a very strong committee, in my opinion. Like, this is a committee of very bright administrators who have mostly baseball backgrounds. A lot of these guys played college baseball or coached college baseball or both. So I really do feel like we've got a very informed committee, which is helpful. But again, to your point, Kyle, I think in regards to the Big Ten, they're really going to lean on past history and separation. You know, how much have you separated yourself from the rest of the league? And whether that's fair or unfair, it's just, it's the world we're living in 2021.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, another point about the ACC, we've talked about Pittsburgh a little bit before on the podcast. They're the other team in the ACC that's getting that in that top 20. Their RPI has dropped 10 spots this weekend after being swept at home against NC State, which is a solid team in its own right. So they're going to keep that as like a regionality host, probably, right? But who else is playing their way in?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tricky for Pitt, right? Like, Pitt is about to Actually, they are officially 16 and 14 in the league. So you just have this clustering of teams. You know, the one thing about Pitt is interesting. You know, they did have a significant break for COVID recently. They came back and won the series at Boston College. I think when I think about the ACC, you know, I do still feel very strongly about Notre Dame, but I think they are vulnerable in a regional format. I like Notre Dame in a super regional where they can manage their pitching more than I like them in a regional, ironically, but they will be at home. You know, I Pitt is a very neat team. They're kind of like that older team that, because of COVID, more guys came back than you'd normally get back. So they're old, they play old, they've got just enough pitching. The team, if you made me bet on a team in the ACC to do damage, my first wager would be Florida State. That said, Parker Messick did not start this weekend. And so that is a major, the two pillars for Florida State for me are Parker Messick and Matt Nelson. So if Messick, he's got a back issue. If that's going to be a lingering thing, that's a huge data point for me. But, you know, the two teams screaming out from the back are NC State and Virginia. I think they, outside of Florida State, are the two most dangerous teams in the league in the postseason. And then everybody else, you know, Pitt, Virginia Tech, you know, Clemson, North Carolina. I don't even know what you're going to do with these teams. Just chuck them in a bucket and you know, who knows what we're going to get from those teams. Louisville's the same way. I'm completely mystified by Louisville. I have no idea who they are. And so, yeah, it's going to be, I mean, what a fascinating league, really.
Yeah, I picked Louisville to win the Atlantic this year, and they're like 4.5 games back.
Yeah, just got swept again, it looks like. And I mean, obviously one of the most talented, great coached team, but I mean, the ACC has turned into a bloodbath where you're right. It's just like toss their names in a hat, pull it out, and any ACC team seems to be able to win on any given weekend in a conference series.
Yeah, and there's no logic to it. Like I had Louisville earlier, and I'm telling you guys, you watch Louisville's position player group and you think, okay, first of all, I said this on the air, you could take Louisville's position player group, as athletic and physical as it is, and you could make them Louisville football's kickoff team, and it might be the best kickoff team in the country. Like, these dudes are physical, athletic, fast, but they weren't playing well early, and they were playing terrible defense, and we kept thinking, hey, they got a track team in the outfield. You know, these guys are going to play great defense. They just haven't done it. And then the other thing we thought is, okay, when Benelis gets hot, that'll improve. Benelis is hot as heck, and still they're the same team. And then we thought, hey, when their pitching gets healthy, well, hey, Jared Poland threw this weekend. And, you know, it's like all these things that we were leaning on are happening, and yet it's almost like it's getting worse for Louisville. And so I don't, but again, the talent is the talent. I don't know. It's a long way of saying, I don't know what to tell you about Louisville.
So let's move to a region that doesn't get talked about a lot with college baseball. Let's go to the Pacific Northwest, because we have some interesting things going on up there. Oregon is obviously having a really special year, and Gonzaga too. I think big news for the Zags is that they got put on this list of 20 potential hosts. And maybe, especially if you're from the South, that's a little bit of a head scratcher of like, what the heck, Gonzaga's good at baseball too now. And I mean, their program has had a COVID pause, but I mean, if you look, they're at 16-4 in the West Coast Conference. They're going to play Oregon. They've had some games. They came out to TCU, right? And they've had some good wins. What's your take on Gonzaga?
Yeah, Gonzaga is, I got to see them early when they came to Surprise the first weekend of the season. And, you know, they have run the perfect playbook for a mid-major. They've done exactly what the committee would ask a mid-major to do, is get on the road, play a good schedule, and actually win and compete. And you referenced their series win at TCU, which, you know, until this weekend was a top eight team, and maybe they still are. I mean, that's obviously not a good weekend for TCU this weekend, losing a home series to Louisiana Monroe. But that said, you know, Gonzaga is another one of those teams where they've got five fifth-year players in their everyday lineup. They're old and they're smart and they're actually very physical. This is a big team. You know, Ernie Yake, their shortstop, is, I would imagine he will be WCC Player of the Year. He's a great player. Just, you know, he's just not as physical as an SEC player. They've got just enough pitching. You know, Alec Jacobs, kind of a slot shifting veteran. Gabe Hughes, I think, actually would be a big pick next year. He's only a second year player. So Gonzaga is very dangerous. What they don't have is pitching depth. And so, you know, if they get into the loser's bracket of a regional, that could be a problem. But hey, we've all seen it, years where you don't need a ton of pitching depth to do damage in the postseason. It's two weekends, really, until Omaha. So yeah, Gonzaga is a really good club. And I would tell you guys that, you know, Arkansas and Vanderbilt are the two teams that if they don't make it to Omaha, I'm just going to be flat surprised. Like that's just going to shock me. And I've said this to many people, the other six teams that show up in Omaha, you could tell me Fairfield and I would be like, you know what? I could see it. I just feel like I have no idea what's going to happen with the rest of the postseason. I feel like I know Arkansas and Vandy will be in Omaha. I feel like I literally don't know anything else.
Yeah, it's a total crapshoot this year, but that's what makes for great baseball. I mean, we're going to have such a fun stretch run the last week here of regular season, and then we've got conference tournaments going on. But talking about postseason, how do you identify an underdog in a regional? I mean, you can clearly easily just pick the one seeds, but you know some of the two and three seeds, and maybe even a four seed here and there, is going to win one of the regionals. What do you like about underdogs that makes you want to pick them?
Yeah, the right, like those Omaha sleepers kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like, you know, I'll tell you, first of all, I like to identify vulnerable hosts. I think it kind of starts there sometimes. You know, who are hosts that maybe are hosting for the first time, or maybe it's a brand name host that, you know, like I remember in 2012, I did not call Stony Brook. I'm not saying that, so let's be clear there. But, you know, when you look back at Stony Brook, like I recall Miami as the host of the Coral Gables Regional and being a vulnerable host. You know, I recall LSU. I don't think that was a vintage LSU team. You know, that was the year before Bregman. So I think vulnerability of the host is one thing. And I think that the thing I like in sleepers is, and this year will be a weird year for that, is I like teams that have regional experience, because something about an NCAA tournament and the regional format in particular, it's so unusual for a college baseball player and coach. And there's so much adrenaline and anxiety that, you know, sometimes you can be halfway through the first game before you even, you know, kind of come to, if that makes sense. And so I like the teams that, you know, like Kent State in 2012, when they went, hey, those kids had been to three or four regionals together, you know, like they knew what it looks like. They knew what it smelled like. They knew what it felt like. So I think those are a couple things. I don't necessarily over-index on pitching depth. I do get nervous about teams that don't play good defense. I think that can exacerbate itself in the postseason. But I think the most important thing is vulnerable hosts and teams that have been, that have that postseason experience. Although I will tell you guys, like this year, who has postseason experience this year? Like nobody, right? It's like, we skipped a whole year of the postseason. So that part's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. I have another follow-up question about that. There's been several conferences, I can't name them off the top of my head, that have added four game conference weekends. Do you think that helps some teams kind of have that, like, because you have some midweek games in there, so you have to have like five starters somewhere.
Yeah.
So you end up playing like four or five games sometimes at regionals. Do you think that helps a lot?
Yeah, I think I'm really curious about that. You know, obviously 2021 will be a small sample size, and I think a lot of coaches are anxious to go back to three game series. The four game series, you know, just so meh, you know, like, yeah, it's just so many 2-2 series. It's like, you don't even know what to make of it. And so, I think my gut is that those teams from leagues that played four game weekends will have an advantage, but I just, you know, I just don't know until it plays out. And so, at the end of the day, the best way to win a regional is to not even go there, right? Like just win three straight games. And so, you know, but I also would say, I don't know how many teams we've got this year that are capable of that, that have enough depth across the board that they can, you know, kind of not take a bullet for three games. So another long way of saying, I'm just super fascinated to see the way it plays out.
Well, it feels like in this year in college baseball, depth is an interesting thing, because you have those fifth year, sixth year seniors. You have true freshmen making a difference. I think I was watching, it was Baylor, Oklahoma State this weekend, and they brought a pitcher in, only had a couple innings pitched all year, and he comes out throwing like 92 miles per hour. Yeah. Like he's just like, who is this guy? Like, why hasn't he gotten into like games? So like, it seems like depth is like, there's a little bit of an equalizer, where across the country, there's depth at a whole lot of schools.
Yeah, I've been teasing people that Mississippi State is a witness protection program for guys that throw 95 plus. Like they keep throwing guys. I'll never forget. I saw Preston Johnson. No offense to Preston Johnson, but he's the perfect example. Saw him throw like a month ago, you know, and he's like 95 with this wicked breaking ball. And you're like, Preston Johnson, I've never heard that name before. Like who are you? Like why are you a second round pick that I've never read your name before? And so, I think that's it's such a fascinating year because think about how old college baseball is. I mean, sixth year players. I mean, TCU has 5 6th year players. Like those kids are 24 years old. Kevin Copps is 24 years old. And yet think about the impact some of these true freshmen are making in college baseball. And again, both of those groups, the old guys and the young guys, are in college baseball because we went from a 40-round draft to a 5-round draft overnight. But, I mean, think about LSU, Trey Morgan, and Dylan Cruz. I mean, these kids are going to be in the hunt for first-team All-SEC as true freshmen, right? I mean, Trey Morgan, if they were voting, Trey Morgan would need to get votes for SEC Player of the Year. He's a true freshman that didn't even have a high school season last year, right? It's crazy. I look about TCU, as old as they are, they have 3 true freshmen they play every day. So I agree. It's really amazing all those little idiosyncrasies we have in college baseball this year.
So this year definitely has been special in that coaches have to wear they already have to wear so many hats, but I feel like the manager hat is even like a bigger hat this year, trying to get guys in games, trying to figure out the best lineup. And I'm curious what your thoughts are and who's going to win coach of the year this year. Who's in that top tier for you? Because you have, I mean, of course you got to look at like what Vitello at Tennessee, what he's doing there. I mean, Dave Van Horn, obviously there's a couple guys out on the West Coast, Jake Johnson, a lot of Conference USA coaches have really done something special this year. So, I mean, this feels like in every year there's so many coaches that deserve to be in this conversation.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. And I'll rattle off a bunch of them. You know, you mentioned Dave Van Horn. Somebody texted me yesterday and said, hey, like if Tennessee wins this series, do they become the number one overall seed? And I basically texted back to them, no freaking way, right? Like if you look at Arkansas's schedule, it is so much more difficult than anyone else's. It's as if the SEC office was mad at Dave Van Horn or something. Like not only did they play more good teams than everybody else, they were all on the road. You know, like it's just insane, Arkansas's road schedule, but yet they're winning every series anyway. I think Tony Vitello, you know, again, like they like Tennessee legitimately has a chance to win the SEC, which is incredible. You know, I think when you go into the Big Ten, Will Bolt is the name that jumps to the top of the list for me. You know, they really have gotten things rolling at Nebraska quickly. I think the ACC has fascinating teams. Link Jarrett, I think, has to be in the mix. I think Link Jarrett probably would end up winning National Coach of the Year based on what a leap Notre Dame has made. But I think Mike Bell has to be talked about there. You know, I think about team guys like Kevin O'Sullivan and Brian O'Connor at Florida and Virginia, where they're different, but teams that were buried early or really struggled early. Hey, Elliott Avance in that regard. I think, guys, there's a ton of candidates in the Pac-12. I mean, Stanford had a historically bad 2020 season, and yet they got a chance to win the league. Mark Wasikowski at Oregon, what he's doing. You mentioned Jay Johnson. I'll tell you that if you made me only pick a couple names, I might actually pick Link Jarrett and Tracy Smith, because I'm going to write an article about that this week. But if you look at everything Arizona State has endured as a program over the last 12 months, it's unthinkable that they would make an NCAA tournament this year. And not only do they have a chance at an NCAA tournament, I mean, they're really kind of locking themselves in right now with that series win over Oregon State. So I you know, it's fun in that regard. There's been a lot of great candidates.
I mean, I love that point on Arizona State, because I think with Arizona State, and you know, this expectation is making it to Omaha, doing really well. And you look at this Arizona State team, and it's one of those teams that your heart breaks that they didn't have a 2020 season, because that was going to be a really special team. They go and lose like all of their pitchers, it seems like, just the worst luck with injury bug. And yeah, they just put up like 10 runs on Oregon State or something, like one of the best pitching staffs in the country, and they won that series, and they've really taken care of business and have turned into a team that's no one's going to want in their regional.
For sure. Yeah, they're really an interesting team. They play 6 freshmen every day. And three of them are true freshmen. Three of them are second year freshmen. Their pitching has been, hey, Kai Murphy, who is, you know, my old boss, Pat Murphy's son, who was an everyday right fielder, the pitching just keeps getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And out of nowhere, he makes his second appearance of the year last week at Cal and first start, second appearance overall on the mound, and throws a 7-inning one hitter, right? So it's just like, they're almost like a pickup travel ball team right now that they're just making it up as they go along, but there's certainly a winning spirit there.
And I want to make sure you get a chance to talk a little bit more about Notre Dame, because what Notre Dame has done this year is really special. There's, you know, a few guys you can point out to as like, yeah, those are pretty elite talents. But for the most part, like, especially like you mentioned with their pitching staff, they're really just piecing outings together. They're really doing an amazing job. Link Jarrett is there of getting contributions from all across the board and that pitching staff and just winning weekends. Like, I mean, they lost last weekend to Florida State, but that's the only series they lost this year. And, you know, if you said that at the beginning of this year, I'm sure Notre Dame fans would have been stacked about that.
Yeah, no question. I would tell you that, like, a lot of times when coaches take over a program, there's a learning curve. You know, there's things you didn't know when you took the job. There's getting used to certain things. And it's almost as if for Link Jarrett, the learning curve was like 7 seconds, right? Like, it is just every move he's made, whether it's hire Rich Wallace, who's got private school recruiting in his background, whether it's maintain Chuck Restano, who's done an unbelievable job with those pitchers. You know, I think it's really easy to forget that Link Jarrett is a Mike Martin disciple, right? Like, that's who he played for. And the Florida State roots are his, but I think there's a lot of a perfect storm coming together. Notre Dame's another one of those teams. Very old team. They've got 5 fourth year players in their everyday lineup. And so what Link Jarrett has been able to do, almost like the conductor of an orchestra, he's created a very, a very efficient team offense where, hey, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Nico Cavadas, you're going to be the enforcer. And he's helped Nico Cavadas take his game from, hey, pull power only, to power to all fields and I'll take walks. You know, they've got a speed element to their game. They can bunt. They've got a kid like Brannigan, who's a two-way player. And on the pitching side, and this is why I'm nervous about them in a regional, they've basically gone into their every weekend saying, hey, we've got these 6 arms that are going to have to take care of 27 innings. When we have a chance to win, when we don't have a chance to win, we will go deeper into the bullpen. And we don't know how the 27 innings are going to play out on Thursday. We won't find out until Friday and then into the weekend. And we just got to roll with it. And again, look at some of, like, Tanner Kohlhepp is a transfer that they got. You know, they've got Joe Sheridan, who's a grad transfer, John Michael Bertrand, grad transfer. So, man, they've done such a great job identifying opportunities, identifying areas where they got to get a little bit better. And I would just tell you, Notre Dame plays with a very high baseball IQ, and that's what makes them very hard to defend.
All right, Coach Runes, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on our podcast. Where can people find you this weekend on broadcasting if you're doing any games?
Yeah, so my next game is Saturday, this coming Saturday. I have it's Indiana at Nebraska, or Nebraska at Indiana. I don't know where it is. I'm going to be calling it from home because that's what we're doing this year. So, so that's my next one. I'm looking forward to that. And then I have a ton of Big 12 tournament games after that. And then we go into, bases loaded and super regionals, and down the stretch we come. So I put all of it on my Twitter page, Mike_Rooney. And so not hard to figure it out, but yeah, looking forward to it. So.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, boys. Thanks.
So thanks again to Mike Rooney for joining us. Kyle, that was a lot of fun talking to him, didn't you think?
Oh yeah. He's great. He's just really fun. And he is definitely the college baseball super fan.
If I had like half his charisma, like, I would be happy. Like, he is just like such a charismatic, entertaining guy. I mean, obviously loves the game of college baseball.
I bet he traded in hair for charisma, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Set charisma, max stats, sacrifice hair.
That's totally fine. I would sacrifice my hair for charisma.
Well. If only. So we didn't get to it before, but I want to run through just a little bit of the top 50 before we now look ahead at next week. I don't know if you thought this, but doing the top 50, this was the hardest of the year. This is like what I think might be the hardest we've ever done, because there is a clear number one in Arkansas. After that, I think there is a case for a whole lot of teams from two on, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know what to like how to even start, because like Texas and Mississippi State and Tennessee and Vanderbilt all lost series this weekend.
Well, but not Texas. All we know. Texas was idle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But they all didn't win the series this weekend. So they're all, and we know they're all really good teams based on what they've done the whole year. Like they've kind of solidified their resume as top 10 teams, even top five teams. So like it's kind of just a crapshoot. Like, who do you pick as number one? Vanderbilt went up after losing a series.
Exactly. So we have Arkansas at the number one overall, but in that group after that, we chose Vanderbilt as the next team, so number two. So Vanderbilt sneaks up one spot after losing a series at Ole Miss. You never love to see that. But then the team behind them, number three, Texas, was idle. You don't really love moving teams around too much when they're idle, but Texas moves up one spot. We dropped Mississippi State two spots for losing a series to Missouri. A lot of other outlets dropped Mississippi State more, but when I look down at the teams that are right below them, I think Mississippi State's better than Texas Tech. I mean, they beat them head to head. I think Mississippi State's better than Oregon, Arizona. So I don't know. I just really struggle to find how to drop Mississippi State more. Tennessee, number five, they stayed put after a competitive series against Arkansas. Florida's up to six, Notre Dame seven, Texas Tech eight, Oregon, Arizona round out the top 10. UCLA, UC Irvine, Oklahoma State join the top 25 at 22, 23, and 24. VCU cracks the top 50 at 49. They've won 16 games in a row. So we mentioned them last week. They were idle this week, so they have that streak going still, and they made it into the top 50. The rest of the top 50 is at collegebaseball.info on the website. Go check it out if you're interested. But Kyle, I took the lead in the pick'em this week. I'm up 6-5. I ended your run there. I was getting worried. You'd found some like strategy magic that I wasn't quite grasping, but my gut did the job this last week.
Unfortunately. But I think this week you will be choosing the first series and then I get, oh no, I'm just kidding. I read it the opposite way. I'll have a few opportunities.
Your problem. You're overthinking it. You got to go with the gut, Kyle.
But it's unfortunate because I need this one. And I think we've probably seen that the person who picks the result first has a higher winning percentage on the season. So we'll have to see. So I think it's my turn to go first.
We'll have to do an autopsy analysis on the end of the year and see what was the actual best predictor of who's winning.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like stats.
Give you an off-season project.
All right. So first series, I'm going to give you, let's start with Miami at Louisville.
Whew. Started with a toughie here.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the, like, Louisville has not gotten swept ever since joining the ACC. And that was like a stat that got ruined by, kind of surprisingly, by Clemson. The following week, Louisville bounced back, won a series at Duke, and then bam, North Carolina swept them. Oh. So in their last three ACC series, Louisville's gotten swept twice after never having been swept before in conference.
That's pretty brutal. Both were road series, though.
Both were road series, and this one's going to be at home. I'd say, like, Miami's had an up-and-down season, but they just beat Georgia Tech in a series. I'm leaning Miami in this one. I'm going to go road team wins 2 out of 3.
All right, that's fair. I'm 2 out of 3, and I'm going to go Louisville 2 out of 3. I think the home team, Louisville's got, like, needs to get back on track. They're an insanely talented team that is kind of in their own head right now. It seems like Dan McDonald's not going to let his team falter this much down the stretch. I think they're definitely a lock in the tournament, but so that I don't have that to worry about, but you just don't want to go into the tournament cold. Like they're definitely on pace to do. So I think they get it turned around, especially at home this week against an equally talented Miami team.
I don't know if I agree that they're a lock right now. They're 55 RPI and they're 16-13 conference. If they get swept here, I don't think they're in.
I think they would have the benefit of the doubt when it comes to like comparing another similar team that's on the bubble, because I don't know, the committee thing cares about talent levels we've seen over the years, but they also care about RPI. So yeah, you may be right.
Yeah. I don't think they can get swept. I think maybe even if they lose this series, if they end up over 500, they're going to at least put some space between them and maybe like a Duke team sneaking up on them or something like that. But I would be worried if I were Clemson fans, right? Or Louisville fans right now.
And Clemson.
Yeah. I'd be less worried for Clemson. Clemson seems to be playing better, but we're not talking about Clemson now. And we're going to now talk about, let's stick in the ACC, Florida State, NC State.
This is a really good series that I think I'm glad that I get to pick first.
Yeah, I think, was it NC State started 1-8 in the ACC?
Yeah.
Now I mean, they're
17-13 in conference, coming off of a road series sweep at Pitt, which is, I don't know, very weird. Pitt, like, swept Florida State on the road to start the ACC season, which just started the yo-yo year for the conference. And they also coming off of a road series victory 2-3 at Wake, which is a talented team that came in with high expectations and has not lived up to them for sure. I'm going to take North Carolina State. I just had it. Where'd it go? This is a home series for them. I'm going to take NC State 2-3.
I like where NC State's trending, and I really want to pick them to sweep, but that would be kind of ignoring what Florida State's been doing.
Yeah.
State's biggest question, and Mike Rooney touched on it, is going to be Parker Messick's health. It seems like he's going to be available for this weekend. I think if he is, Florida State wins the series 2-3.
That's totally fair. My turn. All right, let's go Big 12 series, OU Baylor. Baylor needs this one to secure themselves, feel more secure in it, to making the postseason.
Yeah, Oklahoma nearly had a great weekend. They won game one against Texas Tech, and then got just blasted in games 2 and 3, got outscored by like 25 runs or something. Didn't give me a whole lot of confidence in the Sooners. I felt like 2-3 weeks ago, they were a team that, you know, if they just got things going, they would make a big time run at the end. They didn't, they haven't. Baylor just lost the series at Oklahoma State, but has been definitely more of a model of consistency. So give me the Bears 2-3. This feels like a pretty safe pick.
Yeah, and I don't feel safe in mine, but I'm going to go Baylor sweeping. I think Baylor's a really talented team that is playing pretty well. Ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw, that like a talented team in Oklahoma State that we like to start the year. So I'm going to go Baylor sweeping. Not super confident in that, but I'm more confident in that than I am Baylor or OU winning the series in Waco.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Oklahoma just hasn't been able to put it together down the stretch. Let's hop over to the SEC, and let's hop over to two of the worst teams in the SEC, because that's always fun to do. Yes. LSU is going down to Texas A&M. A&M is playing for a spot in the SEC tournament. LSU might be playing for a spot in the NCAA tournament. both of these teams have something to play for this weekend on top of that, because neither of them like each other very much. So, I mean, that probably could be said for every team in the SEC, but it's also true for these two teams. Who do you have in this series?
Well, the Aggie man really wants to take A&M, but A&M is just, they're a really inconsistent team that is pretty bad defensively. In a series rubber match that they needed on Sunday, they lit up 500 runs and they had a total of four errors in just one game, which is pretty bad. Their pitching just looked, I don't know if it's their pitching, but A&M's and Auburn's bats just looked insane this weekend. It was home run after home run and like a lot of doubles and everything. It was an insane amount of runs. So that said, LSU's playing for their lives. I think I'm going to go LSU 2 out of 3, leaving you with a tough decision.
That is a tough decision. LSU has been in need of some sweeps down the stretch and they haven't gotten them. I don't think this A&M team is particularly sweepable, especially saying that they did beat Ole Miss at home.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that A&M squeaks by, but I don't like that pick.
Yeah. A&M winning the series like at home feels more doable than if it were at Alex Box. I mean, A&M plays really well at home. So as noted, as seen by their series win against Ole Miss, but I don't know. It'll be interesting.
All right, give me the last series, Kyle.
Last series. I'm going to go out west to you. Stanford at Oregon.
I think if Stanford hadn't lost this last weekend to Cal, I would have been more inclined to pick Stanford. But they did. Can't pick against the Ducks here. Ducks get 2 out of 3 from Stanford.
I like that. This is tough. I should have gone with a different series because this is tough and I need this one. we might not end tied after all. I think Stanford's too good of a team to get swept. I know it's on the road and Oregon's playing really well. I think Stanford gets at least a game, so I can't pick in the sweep. So yeah, give me Stanford 2 out of 3.
I think that's a better move here. I don't think Stanford is that big of an underdog on the road.
No.
That Oregon and Stanford stadiums play fairly similarly. They both play fairly big. And this probably is going to be a series that has, I hate to say it's going to be a low scoring series because that's basically guaranteeing that they both score like 15 runs in game one, but
guaranteed
series that should be a little bit low scoring. I think that Stanford really goes the way of game one, like they did in the Arizona series. If they can come out and get a lead with their best pitcher, Brendan Beck, who is by far their best starter, then they have two chances to lock up the series. If they can't get a win with Beck, Oregon's going to win this series. Even if they do win with Beck, Oregon can come back and win games 2 and 3 in this one. So that's why I like Oregon.
If Stanford had won at Cal this weekend, would you have picked Stanford instead?
I mean, it's kind of how it went down too, because
right.
Stanford's pitching is they don't quite have the pitching depth, and that was kind of exposed a little bit this weekend at Cal, and that's not the best Cal team. So I think that Oregon's going to have even better shot at exposing Stanford.
Yeah, and it looks like Stanford has another game against Cal today, but non-conference game, I guess.
Yeah, this one's going to be in Palo Alto. So they did 3 at Cal, and then they always do 1 back at the other team's site to kind of give home fans a chance to get the rivalry series.
Well, and there was another game earlier in April. So Stanford won the first one. That one also a non-conference game, and then they won Friday. So the season series is tied 2-2. This is for the season series between Cal and Stanford.
Yep.
That's cool. One.
But this one doesn't count for the conference standings, like you said. And right now, Oregon and Arizona are tied up at first place. So I don't think Samford really has a shot at getting back in that race unless they somehow pull off a sweep or something like that at Oregon.
Yeah, or Arizona loses, but I don't think they have a losable series this weekend. No, just kidding. It's at Oregon State. That is losable, but I don't know. Then that would put Oregon at top or at the top of the standings if they were to beat Stanford. So yeah, you're probably right. It's probably comes down to this weekend for Stanford.
All right, so that's the pick'em. Hopefully it's another W in my pocket, because I think that would be basically the end of it. If I get a 2-game lead here.
Unless we do a post-season, like a conference tournament and then other season pick'em.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe we'll do like a regular season and a post-season type of thing. Because, you know, if we're tied after next week, we'll have to figure something out. But if I take a 2-game lead, maybe that might be the end of it. We'll see.
Well, because you don't want to lose in the postseason. I get it. It's fine.
I mean, no. I mean, there should be different stakes. I mean, postseason, like, you know, every game matters more than any just regular season week thing. So we'll figure it out off the air. We'll get that locked down and ready for the next couple of weeks. All right, Kyle, thanks for joining. Thanks again for Mike Rooney for joining. Good job, Kyle, getting him on the podcast, because that is absolutely the coolest guy we've had on the podcast. No insults to some of the other coaches that we've had hop on for interviews, but Mike Rooney's pretty cool. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already done it, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it. Apple, Spotify, Google. It's on all of those. We're on social media at CollegeBallNat. That's Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to follow us there. We love chatting with fans. We have a bunch of content on our website, collegebaseball.info. We have the Bubble Watch going up today. We have recaps of series. We have series previews. We got a whole lot going on the website, so be sure to check it out, collegebaseball.info. Until next week, have a great week.